Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Slovak Ancestry Podcast, the podcast about genealogy, family history, and heritage. My name is Michal Rázus, and this podcast is created with the support of podcast industry. As usually, I am broadcasting from Prešov, Slovakia, and today I am going to speak with my friend Rita Hendershot. Hello, Rita. How are you doing?
I am doing well, Michal. How are you?
Yeah, everything is great. So I would really like to learn and share more information about your family and about your ancestors that you have in Slovakia. So please tell us, what is your connection?
Well, I am connected to Slovakia primarily through Eastern Slovakia and the villages of Žalobin, Poša, Zemplin, and what is today called Streda nad Bodrogom. Four of my great-grandparents were born in Slovakia, and two of my great-grandparents were first-generation Slovak-American. And I've always had an interest in genealogy for many, many years, but as many young people are, they don't always take advantage of their grandparents being around and great-grandparents to ask questions. So the time of my pursuit was much later. But it's originated with my great-grandfather on my father's side of the family, Georgi Nadzim, who was born in 1892 in Poša to Mihaly Nadzim and Maria Smoly. He emigrated to the U.S. in 1907. My Uncle John, who had been involved in genealogy, said that he had gone back to Slovakia at one point, that he initially worked in the coal mines and did not like it before returning. I've not been able to find records of that, but I do know that in the 1910 census here in America, that he was a boarder in the Sotok household. And George's older sister, Anna, arrived in the U.S. in 1908 with her son, Jan, to join her husband in Munhall. And George and John both were working in the steel mills at that time. I also discovered in that 1910 census how it is likely that George Nadzim met his future wife, Mary Mrazek. The Mrazek family lived literally next door to the Zotaks. John Mrazek, who was born in 1864 in Žalobin, and his wife Anna and their children lived next door to the Zotaks. And Maria Mrazek, or Mary Mrazek, was 16 at the time, and she and George would later marry in 1912 and have three sons, Thomas, George, and John, and George was my paternal grandfather. So that takes care of my father's side of the family. On my mother's side of the family, my mother's maternal grandfather was Thomas István, and he was born in 1888 in Krasna Luka to Nicholas and Anna Harchar. Thomas emigrated in 1906, following his brothers Charles and John to the Pittsburgh area. Charles arrived in 1898, and John in 1904. They were both his older brothers, and Thomas in 1906. Thomas initially lived with Charles and his wife and child as a boarder before marrying Elizabeth Chismar, who was born to George Chismar and Mary Bodnar, both of whom were immigrants from Slovakia. Thomas and Elizabeth had four children, Anne, Edward, Rita Dolores, and William. Rita Dolores was my mother's mother, but she died in 1941 when my mother was just 17 months old. I also noticed that in the 1910 census that Charles and Thomas, their names were listed as Eastman, not István. But in later records that I was able to find here in the U.S., Charles and John returned to using the name István as their legal name, whereas my great-grandfather continued to use the name Eastman. And then my mother's paternal grandparents were Hungarian, but from the part of the Austria-Hungary Empire that is today in very southern Slovakia. And her grandfather was Janos Takács and his wife, Borbála Schmida. And Janos was born in 1867 in Streda nad Bodrogom to Michael and Anna. And Barbara was born in 1878 in Zemplin. Her father, Janos, and her mother was Erzsébet Varga. They married in 1895, and they list on future census that they arrived in 1901. However, there are notations that they had, at least Janos had at least twice, maybe three times, returned to Slovakia and before coming back. And I'm not really sure what the reason was. And there was also a note indicating that Barbara had also one time returned before coming and settling permanently in 1901. It's not clear to me if that was for family reasons. I later was able to discover that despite them only having two sons that lived to adulthood, Francis, born in 1903, and Louis, who is my maternal grandfather in 1916, I was able to find records of seven stillbirths that Barbara suffered. And so I don't know if there were emotional reasons as to why they maybe would have returned several times or not. But they were ethnic Hungarians, but in present-day Slovakia. And I don't know what their family life was like in Slovakia, because in 1910, they were renters, but by 1920, they owned their home. And I learned from my aunt that my great-grandfather had built the home that I knew as the Take Us Home, which was a beautiful three-story home with wonderful woodwork and such. So I think there may have been a little bit of money that the Take Us's were able to accumulate or acquire that it took longer for the Nadzems and Istvans to be able to do to kind of set up their life here in the U.S. And so that is sort of in a nutshell my connection to Slovakia and my ancestry there. One of your questions was, why did they leave? Specifically, I do not know for any of them. It is curious as to why the Takases would have left, given that they were ethnic Hungarian, but perhaps even then, the promise of greater fortunes in America perhaps propelled them to come here. I'm sure that for the Slovak ancestors, it was poverty, illnesses, Magyarization that prompted them to come to America. But for many of those immigrants, they traded one set of economic exploitation for another in terms of working in the steel mills in particular, and how very difficult and dangerous that work was.
Maybe you know a little bit more about their conditions when they came to the United States. How would you describe the environment or what kind of jobs they were doing? How was the life for them?
I think that the life was difficult. Often when they came, at least I've been able to trace and know this for the Nadzems, they would join family and become boarders in a home with another family until they married and set off on their own. But often family would live with them. So I think they were renting. And then I know the part of Munhall where they initially settled, it would be very crowded. The housing would not be all that good in terms of quality, but they were beginning to make a life of their own, and they were building families and making those connections through church and through the ethnic groups in at the steel mills. But it was very dangerous work. Of course, as any descendant of immigrants who worked in the steel mills, we've all heard the stories about the dangers, about how fires would start and they would exit and close doors, knowing they were leaving workers behind to meet their death. The number of injuries and deaths that occurred from just falling in the job, it was a very, very dangerous work. And at the time of the steel mills and the industrialization, I think the air quality was not very good. I know my mother told stories about she was born in 1940, and as a young woman working, she would go home for lunch and have to change her shirt because of how dirty the air was. And I've seen pictures of Pittsburgh in the early 1900s, and I'm struck that there was a dirtiness to the air and a dinginess to the condition. So I think life was hard, no doubt about it. But I think we all can imagine that they had opportunities that they did not have if they had stayed in Slovakia. And I also think that the real advantages to many immigrants came after World War II, where here in America, they were better able to take advantage of rising economic fortunes than they would have been had they stayed behind in Slovakia, which then became under authoritarian communist rule. And the limitations for education and work that their family members were faced with after World War II versus here in the United States.
I'm always amazed that people in the United States, in spite they might be second or third generation already living there, and they might not speak the language anymore, but they are still connected to their Slovak identity somehow.
I was always been very proud of my Slovak and Hungarian heritage. My great-grandparents and great-aunts and uncles were the relatives to which I have the fondest childhood memories and close relationships with. My father's father died before my parents married in 1957. My mother's mother died when she herself was a baby. So I think that in some ways, not having those connections impacted the relationships I had with my grandparents. But with my great-grandparents and aunts and uncles, there was such an emphasis on the gathering of family and the eating of food, and you were always welcome. And it was obvious how very fond they were of my parents and of us, that that connection was just so strong. For the Nadsom side of the family, George and Mary, they hosted for their children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren the Christmas Eve dinners. And so the whole family would gather and there'd be wonderful food. One of my uncles would pretend he had to go to work in the steel mill, and he would come back dressed as Santa to distribute gifts to all the children. And it was just very, very fond memories. I spent a lot of time with them. And so I'm very proud of that connection. And of course, you know, the food plays a part of it, some of which I have tried to pass on to my own daughters, in particular in the making of what I would call, what has been called cold doughs in my family, which were a kind of a cookie that was made with yeast and milk that sat in the refrigerator overnight. And so you rolled the dough out cold and then filled it with liqueur or apricot preserves, sometimes with a nut roll or with like a nut filling. And of course, halupki. But I'm very proud of my Slovak identity, although neither of my parents spoke their language, although my mother did speak Hungarian in the first few years of her life because that was all that was spoken at her home. And now because of the pandemic, I've increasing empty nest with my children moving on, I've begun to take Slovak lessons in hopes that my next trip to Slovakia, I can converse a little bit with family and friends that we see there.
You have several lines of your ancestors connected to the Slovak territory, no matter if they were Slovaks, Hungarians, or other nationalities. But was at least in any of these cases preserved any connection to the Slovakia?
Yes. One of the things that started my search was trying to learn more about George Nadsom and his family. One of the stories I was told growing up was that he was estranged from his family and he did not want to speak. My Uncle John would ask him many, many times. He refused to speak about his family. But as I started going through the records and learning, I was actually able to find that to adulthood, my great-great-grandparents had seven children, of which George was one. And all except one I've been able to find had come to America and was able to trace how they came. Some of the women died young in the 1920s. But I started to learn that some of the pictures and people I met as a young child were actually the descendants of his siblings. For instance, his older sister, Mary, came in 1901 to the U.S. and somehow found her way to Illinois with her husband, John Gulash, who was from Slovakia, was Rusin, we believe. And they did travel to Pittsburgh to visit. I have pictures of them in my own home at confirmations and baptisms. So I think that it was a little more complicated than just that they did not get along. In terms of my great-grandfather's siblings, I think a lot of the animosity might have come from the oldest brother, Michael, who was the first to come to the United States. And I've been able to find records that he ended up in Munhall. There may have been a time where he and George might have traveled back to Slovakia and returned together. But I have no stories about him. I'm not able to connect him in any meaningful way to my memories of being told stories about it. So I suspect that some of that may have been from an older brother, perhaps not approving of some of the choices a younger brother made. With regards to my mother's side of the family, the Istvans, there were five children that Nicholas and Anna had that grew to adulthood, lived to adulthood. And the three boys did come at different times to the United States, Charles, John, and Thomas. But the two sisters remained behind in Slovakia. And I can remember my mother talking about how her grandparents, Elizabeth and Thomas, would worry and talk about worrying about their families that were still behind. And now at that time, that would have been post-World War II in Slovakia, and how they would send money and packages, but were concerned that these things were not getting to them. So in the back of my mind, I was always interested in trying to find out what happened to these two sisters. Could I find family still there? And on our first trip in 2014 to Slovakia, we went to Krasna Luka. You took us there. And we were able to meet two Istvan families. We've not been able to make any connections with them, but I've become quite fond of them. And in the one set of Istvans, we trade cards and communicate that way. But on our third visit to Slovakia in 2018, we were able to go to the archives or the registry office there in Krasna Luka. And then between that, we came upon some women in the streets who were able to give us some information. And we were able to travel and meet, you were able to find for us. And we were able to meet with two descendants of my, what would be my great grandfather's sister's families. Ava married a Stiber in 1896, and Katerina married a Marusha in 1906. And we were able to meet descendants of those two families. And that was, to me, really a watershed moment, because for so long, I had known that these were families that my family worried about, wondered about, and I was not able to find anything or learn anything about them. And after the first day that we met with Jan Marusha on the way back, it had been a sunny day, but we encountered a little rain shower. The sun was shining, but it was a light rain. And I was so overcome with joy at having finally found this missing segment of that family tree that I teared up, because to me, it was almost like a sign that my great-grandfather in heaven was looking down and was happy to see that at long last the family had reconnected and had gained contact with each other. And then a couple of days later, we met with Stefan Stiber, who we spent some time with talking about their work lives, where they did a lot of contract work in their youth in Ukraine. And it was very good to make that connection. One of the fond memories I have of that trip was Jan Marusha took us to Krasna Luka. And we stopped along the road heading into the village, and he pointed up into the hills as to where the original family had lived. And he indicated, we were able to gather that as time went by, and I think as people were leaving the area to go to ships, to come to the United States, that home became almost a bit of an inn or a stopping point for families and men making the journey. We went into Krasna Luka, and he's showing us around. We go to the cemetery. We're meeting some people. And to me, one of the most interesting and yet raises some questions as well was that we stop at a house, Monica Kondrachova. She was married to Milan, and together we learned that they were folk artists, that her husband Milan had been a violinist, played the accordion, and he was a teacher, and they went around singing folk songs, and their two sons were also raised as musicians and in the folk artistry or folk song tradition.
Our Slovaks listeners will definitely know the famous folk band Kandráčovci. So definitely, yes. Andrej Kandráč is actually the son of the this lady, Mrs. Kandráčová, and she's also quite well-known folk singer here in East Slovakia.
Yes, thank you. When we came upon Monica's home, she was outside working in her garden, and she immediately ushers us in and sets to warming up some halushki for us, which was the best halushki I ever had. And she was so warm and grateful or gracious in terms of taking pictures. She gave us signed CDs of some of Andre and her music, and we were able to spend some time chatting with her. I think that that was a very interesting connection. But later, after I had returned to the U.S., I heard from the son Milan, Andre's brother. He is a priest, and I guess that his emphasis of study has been church music. But anyhow, he wrote to me saying, my mother said you came to visit me. How are we connected? And I conveyed to him the connection, and he wasn't able to put it together. And so it kind of raises for future trips. We know in some way that the Kondrach family and the Istvan family is connected, at least through the Stibers and the Marushas, because in church records, we were able to find that for Katerina, who was Thomas Istvan's sister, for two of her children's marriage, Imrich Kondrat, who was the grandfather of, the grandfather of Andre and Milan, he was witness to two marriages in 1939 and 1941. So I know that typically family were witnesses. Of course, it could have also been friends, but somehow there is a connection between those two families. I just don't know what it is. I don't know if it's through blood or if it was close family friends. I suspect it may be through a family connection because it was two different children that he was a witness in the marriage. So that's something for future trips to learn more about. And as you and I were talking about recently, a lot of times gaining genealogical information is much easier accomplished through face-to-face conversation, because sometimes the questions you ask immediately don't reveal the connection or the answer. But as you talk, you're able to convey, I think, in more detail and complexity, your question, and they're able to give information that they had not thought about that helps you to make connections eventually. As an American, that can be a little frustrating. We want to have our answers, right away. But we ourselves don't know our own history and our own family that well. But this is something I look forward to exploring in the future, because there obviously is a connection to that family, which just to me was a very surprising and delightful coincidence that it happened to be with such a well-known and very beloved folk singer in his family. So, and they were very, and she was a very gracious woman.
It is great that not all the doors have been opened yet, and that we still have some chances to the next journey and to uncover new facts and
yes.
Make new discoveries.
Yes, you know, when I started and I first contacted you in 2014, it was the result of my father had passed away in 2013, left a small amount of money to each of his children. So we put some aside for the girls' college. And then I said, I want to do something I've been wanting to do for a long time, to kind of honor, in a way, my father and the Nadzoms. I want to go to Slovakia. I want to take my children there and have them, and for me to be able to go and see the land that my great-grandparents came from, the villages, the streets they walked on. And that was such a large push of it. And I thought, well, once you were able to confirm, oh, yes, these people, their baptismal records are here, and you took us there, I thought that in some ways that would satisfy my curiosity. But it's actually resulted in more and more questions. And I don't know that you're ever done. asking those questions. For instance, in our first trip to Slovakia in 2014, you took us to Poša and we met with Maria and Josef Nadzom. And they invited us and fed us very, very well. And we're talking and we're trying to make the connection and we can't. And Maria sends her son Marek to go and gather Jan Nadzom, who is an older man in the village. And he comes with a couple of other people. And we're all trying to figure out, are there any connections? But as soon as Jan Nadzom walked into the room, we were all taken, my children, my husband and I, at the astounding resemblance he had to my father. Just physically, the way he held his arms, the way he walked, everything about him. We weren't able to make that connection. And he soon, I gather, he was beginning in the early stages of Alzheimer's, and he has since passed away. But that intrigued me. And I find myself often thinking back to him and our time spent with him. We went out to the cemetery, and then you were able to get keys to let us into the old Greek Catholic church there near the cemetery grounds, and to be able to go inside there in that church, St. Joseph, I think it's called. And that was just so overwhelming to be able to physically touch that part of my family history. We've kept in touch with Josef and Maria. The other thing we noticed right away was that Josef Nadzom strongly resembles my father's brother, Jim. And we've not been able to make the connection yet, but in talking about further inquiries, we have been able to learn some things about Josef's grandparents, and the connection may be not just through the Nadzom side, but there is also Smoley in his family line. And I've stumbled upon some information that I hope will be able to help us learn a little bit more. But these records are now more recent. They're from the 1920s, so it's more difficult to get a hold of. And then the pandemic's gotten in the way. But it's kind of like, you know, there's a connection. You just need the records to find out what the connection is, because human memory is not always accurate in terms of recalling dates and family people. For instance, information I had gotten from Maria, she sent me a whole page of information about all the Nadzoms she could think about and talk to the other elderly people in the village. But she insisted that Josef's grandfather, Juraj, was born in 1889. And who his wife was, and I could not find any records of that. Last summer, during the pandemic, I just started going through every single record online through Family Search and just making a notebook full of all the Nadzoms I encountered. And I stumbled upon a church register that had an 1892 marriage record for Janos Nadzom and an Anna Pavlikova, which matched the name that I was given for Juraj's wife, but it was a completely different year. We're now trying to, you and I have talked about, we're trying to now kind of make that connection, because I can find records here in the U.S. of an 1899 Juraj, who would have been then in 1921 and 1924, the father of Josef's father and uncle. But he went to the United States and never came back. He had a wife and he had two children here in Slovakia, but he came to the United States. There is records I have here of an 1899 George Nadzom in the Pittsburgh area, but I need to make that connection, to find out if I'm, because everybody's named Juraj or Jan, Anna and Maria. So it can be hard to determine which, if you're looking at the correct person. But that's another interesting angle. And it gives me a great deal of excitement and hope that I might be able to make that connection one day soon between my family and Josef's family. Because I can feel there's the connection. I just don't have the records for it to make it.
Let's hope that we can fill in the missing pieces of the puzzle of your family tree soon.
And yes.
Last one question. It's definitely worth mentioning that you took also younger generation to the trip to Slovakia, your two lovely daughters. One is an artist, another is a chemist and swimmer. How do they perceive this trip, or what do they think about their Slovak heritage and Hungarian heritage?
Yeah, to them, it was quite an eye-opening experience. I grew up in Pittsburgh, went to Penn State, and met and married my husband. But at that time, he had a job in California. We never returned to Pennsylvania to live. So for my daughters, their connection to both sides of their family, through their father and mine, is more long distance. You travel and you see them, or they come to you. So they don't have the experience I did of connecting with grandparents and great-grandparents, aunts and uncles. So this was an opportunity, I think, for them to get a peek at a little bit about what it meant as a Slovak American to visit, and the culture, the traditions, the food, the warmth that I encountered as a child through my Slovak and Hungarian family. And they were both very surprised that Slovakia was such a pretty country, the castles, but they were just amazed that people answered the phone when you would call, that they said, yes, stop on by, let's meet these Americans and see if we know who they are. Because here in the United States, we have caller ID. You know, if you don't recognize the phone number, you don't have to answer. And if the person doesn't leave a message, you may never know why they called. So they were very surprised at just how open and kind people were to complete strangers. And that is something that has struck them on both trips. Now, as you know, they both gave me a hard time, especially on the second trip. There was a lot of focus on us visiting old churches, and the wooden churches in particular. And I was very taken by that, very impressed. And they would tease me a lot. But just in the last few months, my older daughter said to me, she goes, I want to apologize that I ever teased you about that. She goes, because, you know, it really is cool that we were able to go and see something like that, that many people don't realize is such a part of Slovakia's history. And that made me feel good. You know, youth is often wasted on the young, and they don't often know how to appreciate the history that's come before them. But I began to get a peek that perhaps my older daughter was starting to mature in that way. But they both loved it. I think it really opened their eyes to the world is a small place, and people are people everywhere. And we might eat different foods and live differently, different houses, different cultures and traditions, but we all have the same basic needs and desires that we want to be able to care for our families, take care of them, and to see our children and grandchildren grow and prosper and make good and happy lives for themselves. And that's true no matter where you are in the world. And I was happy that I was able to show them that part of my past, and for them, hopefully, to maybe take that step towards seeing themselves as citizens of the world and not just of the United States, that the world is a small place.
These were very nice words for the conclusion of our today's conversation. Thank you very much, Rita, for accepting the invitation and taking the time.
Well, thank you very much. And Mikala, it was wonderful. And I hope that someday soon I'll be able to travel back again and meet with you and continue our journey in my genealogy search.
You are always welcome. And I'm looking forward for the next meetings. All the best to you and goodbye.
Bye-bye.
That was all for today. And I am looking forward to you next week. You were listening to Slovak Ancestry podcast with Michal Rázus, created with the support of podcast industry. You can find us at Spotify, Google Podcast, and Apple Podcast. If you have an interesting family story and you would like to share it, feel free to contact me via email in the description.